Thank you all for joining our Tuesday conference call. We are Indivisible Austin, and we're so happy that you could join us today. For those of you who are new to this group, our mission, we support citizen activists in Central Texas by providing leadership, resources, tools, and training to oppose authoritarianism and defend democracy. Our main website is indivisibleaustin.com, and you can follow us at @indivisibleATX on Twitter. I'm Tom. I'm on the board. And joining is Lisa. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Great.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting day, interesting night. Lots of news coming out. We're just telling the group here that, you know, Maddow's apparently got some Trump tax returns from 2005, and, you know, everything's really interesting in the land of resistance. So, but before we get to our topic tonight, which is going to be about digital safety and security, I hear that we have some announcements and some other news to talk about.
Okay, who's taking over now? Me?
Yep. If you've got
okay.
Something, yeah, yes, ma'am.
Sorry about that. Okay. So first I want to say welcome back after the conference call being on vacation for 2 weeks. We're happy to be back. I came on a couple minutes late, but Tom, did you talk about our plan for conference calls going forward?
We have not. We have not covered anything.
Okay. So our conference calls to date have kind of been a news and updates, and some of us tell you things that are happening, upcoming events, things like that. We are, starting with this call, going to transition to using a significant portion of the conference call for guest speakers and covering topics that are important to the work that we're doing. So this week, we're happy to start with our first one. Talking about digital security, and I have my own digital security mishap this week, so I'll be happy to share that later.
Awesome.
So that's where we are with that. Hopefully somebody is kind of keeping an eye on what's happening with the tax returns, and when we get to the open Q&A at the end can maybe give us a little scoop on that. We have posted, as usual, actions for the week, and our actions for the week also have taken on a little bit different shape this week. Because there are a handful of really big issues that we just need to keep hammering our members of Congress on, Russia investigations, ACA repeal, and a couple of other things, we are going to kind of keep those on as sort of ongoing calls to action that we will just keep calling our members of Congress about. Of course, with ACA repeal bill getting scored this week by the Congressional Budget Office with some very, very bad outcomes for everyone. That is something that's kind of taken on maybe a little bit bigger magnitude than it has for the last few weeks. So some other things kind of overshadowed it. But that's going to be a big focus for us going forward. You may have noticed on our actions for the week that there are a number of things on here that we are featuring from other community organizations in Austin. We have really been focusing on filling out our calendar, our calendar on the indivisibleaustin.com site with not only our own events, but events, rallies, community meetings, events at the Capitol, hearings, things like that, that many of the social justice organizations in Austin and Texas-wide organizations have been doing. So we are making a concerted effort to keep that information easily accessible and kind of putting it up front with our actions for the week as reminders or opportunities if, in fact, you didn't know about some of these organizations or their work and it's something that you want to get more involved in. We are working to make that more accessible. Today, you probably noticed that SB 6, kind of unexpectedly, was debated on the Senate floor. Our Texas Ledge Indivisible team, which is killing it out there, did an unbelievable live tweet of the debate. So I highly recommend, if you want to be really saddened by the state of affairs, going to read that. If you're not mad about SB 6, this will make you so mad about it. This is the so-called transgender bathroom bill, which has much greater implications than who's using which bathroom. So that happened today. Tomorrow, SB 4 is going to be heard. That's the anti-immigration, anti-sanctuary cities bill. That's going to be heard in the House State Affairs Committee. Our friends at Workers' Defense Project have been really organizing for tomorrow. If you are able to go to the Capitol, if you're able to show support for the bill, if you're able to testify, that would be amazing. This is looking like a pretty terrible week for civil rights in the state of Texas. So happy news there. Sorry about that. Let's see, what else? Tomorrow at 11 is our Wednesday coffee meetup. Cindy, are you there?
Yes.
Great. If you'll say a word about that.
Sure. So we've been holding some weekly coffee meetups and bumper sticker giveaways, and we're adding to that as of this week. We have these really nifty wallet cards that we made up to give away at our March 5 rally, and they have our wonderful new design on the front by Julie Gilbert, and then on the back we have our senators, our Texas senators' phone numbers, and then there's blanks where you can fill in your representatives down to your state senator, your state representative, and even your school board superintendent. So it's a great thing to have and carry around in your wallet and take a few extra to give to friends who might want to get involved. So we're going to be doing this week. We will be at Texas French Bread close to the UT campus. There's no need to make a reservation or sign up or anything. Just come on by, say hello, pick up a bumper sticker, sit and chat if you like. We also have put on the calendar for the rest of the month the rest of our meetings. So they're at a different place every week. Next week is at Epic Coffee over off of Anderson Lane, and then we'll be at Dominican Joe's on South Congress the following week after that. So we're hoping to start posting them more in advance. Also, there have been another number of people who have said, hey, we'd like to come too, but we can't come during the day. So we are working on establishing an after 5 coffee meetup for those folks who can't run out on their lunch hour. So that's the coffee meetup stuff. We have events on our Facebook page, and it's also all listed on the calendar on the website. And then the other new thing we have that I'd like to tell people about is we have started a program called Indivisible Austin Action Buddy. And what this is some people are a little shy about going to actions on their own. It's kind of tough to show up and yell at people when you're all on your own. So you can, Tom doesn't have a problem with it, but the rest of us might. and so if you don't want to go to an action by yourself, you can go on this into this Facebook group and find a buddy to go with you. It's also a ride-sharing tool. If you don't have a ride or you want to offer a ride to someone, you can go into this Facebook group and offer a ride or ask for a ride. You have to, because it is a group, you have to ask to join, but don't worry, I'm the administrator and I will approve you. And then once you're in, it's a public group, so people can see who is in the group, but they can't see the posts unless they are members. Now, some of you out there are probably saying, I don't do Facebook. Well, we have an app for that. Not actually an app, but we have a solution for it. If you go onto our website, under the Take Action Now tab, there is a drop-down menu and a tab for Action Buddy and Ride Sharing. And there are instructions there for how you can sign up or request a ride or a buddy or offer a ride or a buddy there. This, however, is a little bit clumsier than just going directly on Facebook, because what's going to happen is you will email Deemi, and Deemi will put you on the page, post for you essentially, and then somebody will get back to you and she will email you with that information. She'll connect you. It's still your responsibility to do everything after that. All we're doing for you is making the connection. Hey, here's somebody who said they would give you a ride, or hey, here's some people who want to go to an action with you. And it's up to you after that to make all those arrangements. But we have that available for you now. And if you want to join the Facebook group, then it's called IATX Action Buddy. And you can find, it's also posted on our Facebook page. And if you still can't find it and you need help, then email me, CindyS@protonmail.com. That's CINDYS and Sam at protonmail.com, and I will help you out.
Well, and I have one more note to, actually, it's a couple of related notes. First of all, for those of you who didn't get to our March 5th event, you missed a show. I mean, it was amazing. Cindy was the organizer, and the whole thing was just so inspiring. I mean, the level of effort that went into that was breathtaking. And one of the things that came out of that was the I Stand Indivisible video, which I can't stop watching, by the way. It's really great. And that's been posted to our indivisibleaustin.com homepage, and you really need to see it. I mean, I encourage everyone to see it. It's about 3-4 minutes long. It's not that long at all, and it's so powerful to see these just regular folks just talking about why they're part of this movement. And so I guess Lisa and Cindy, you were both involved in some aspect of getting that video done. Can you talk a little bit about how that all came together?
I was not at all involved in it. I was just a really happy spectator once it happened.
Well, that's not quite true, because it was your idea.
Okay, you're right. It was my idea, but that was all it was.
So I proceeded to contact some of our many amazingly talented filmmakers that are involved in the movement, and got hold of Stephanie at Spots and Film, and basically told her what we were looking for, and she solicited people to come in to the studio and shoot this film. And basically we asked them to just talk a little bit about who they were as people, as you know, how they identified themselves in life, and why they were part of Indivisible, and some other questions along those lines, and why they wanted to stand Indivisible. And what came out of that was incredibly powerful. And we're just so, so grateful to Stephanie and to everyone from all walks of life, really, who stepped up and were in that video. I also have to mention Carolyn Wonderland and her band donated their appearance. It was fantastic. If you have not heard her, you need to hear her. They're just amazing. And also Steve Brooks wrote a wonderful original song. Now, he didn't write it just for the rally, but he had written it, and when I heard it, I asked him to end the rally with it. So he and his partner came in and performed this great song, and it's really, you can find it on YouTube. I'm actually hoping for a future project that we could raise a little money and shoot a real video with it, maybe using some of the outtakes from the film we did, because that too would be very, very powerful. It's a real catchy tune. Anybody can sing it. And I think that would be a wonderful way to promote what we're about. So I'm just so grateful to everyone who took part in this. It really was a success because of the volunteers.
And I just have to say my experience of the event was part of what I was doing was working with Congressman Lloyd Doggett, and I was so humbled by his – I mean, yes, he gave a full speech, and then he answered questions for so long, and then he came off the stage, and he was immediately, like, surrounded by all these folks who wanted to talk to him. And he had a media engagement downstairs, but we immediately like organized those folks to talk to him. And then he did the media thing for like 20 minutes. And then he was outside for another almost 45 minutes, I'm going to say, just answering questions. And then he took pictures with us and he engaged and he listened. And he had like five people like taking notes, like of all the questions and answers and taking down constituents' names and really engaging. And I was there that entire time, and I was just so like, this is so amazing. This you hear so many negative news stories about, you know, congressmen ducking out of town halls and everything, but he was the model of a congressperson should be. And I think it was just such a great opportunity for everyone to meet him. So anyway, it was really great. So I see that Sarah Clough has joined us, I think. And hello, Sarah.
Hey, y'all. Hi.
So I'm just calling you out there. Anyway, hi there. Do we have any other announcements or any other news items before we get to the main part of our discussion?
Nope, let's move on to that. It's very,
okay.
Very nerve-wracking.
So I wanted to just talk about digital safety and security. So first of all, I did some Googling while we were all talking, and if you have a question, you can dial 5-star on your phone, and we'll get a little icon alert on my dashboard here from all the callers, and then we can unmute you. You can answer or ask your question. What I'll do is I'm going to do a quick spiel about digital security and safety, and then what I want to do is I want to get to the question, the Q&A period, because my experience is that most people have extremely specific questions, and we want to get to those. So as a disclaimer, or as sort of an intro, I do information security for a living. And so I have a lot of background in sort of the human side of security. And regardless of no matter how technical we are getting, no matter what we're talking about, security is really about humans. And so over and over again, you hear stuff in the news about this company got hacked or this other thing happened or, somebody's phone was hacked or something like that. Well, you know, a lot of this stuff in digital security is not that difficult to do if you just stay on top of a few things and keep what's called a high security hygiene. And actually, you don't even have to keep a very high one. You just have to be somewhat hygienic. And so I wanted to talk about those things on this call because I think they're things that every one of us can do, and we can all increase our security. So I'm going to go ahead and mute all callers, because I'm getting some feedback on the line. Okay, there we go. So the first thing, and so again, if you have questions, 5-star, and I'm going to do my little spiel, like maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then we're going to get right to the Q&A session. So the very first thing that I would like to say is a lot of times people talk about digital security and safety, and it's very easy to get into this part of the world where you're starting to sound a little bit jittery and a little bit maybe paranoid. And I think although that may have sounded true, like say 6 months ago or maybe 9 months ago, it isn't so much so true now. Like I think a lot of us have a lot more awareness about what's happening, and I think awareness is good. Awareness is key to keeping yourself safe and secure in any situation, and that goes double or triple or quadruple for the internet. So the first thing that I'd like to say is you have to, the first thing that you can do to secure your life, your digital life, is to start using very, very strong and very secure passwords. And that means one thing, really, and that is abandon whatever system you're using right now to try to create super strong passwords. Like, everyone has their pet trick, like where they've got their favorite teacher's first name combined with their anniversary combined with their dog's name, and then they sort of change things up a little bit, whether they're going to Facebook or Google or their bank or whatever. Or maybe they use the same really strong password on all these sites, which is just terrible. Don't do that. What I suggest everyone should do is they should download or purchase a password manager. They're fairly cheap, $40-$50 at the most. You can have it create passwords for you that you never know. All you have to remember is the one password that will get you into the system. And then that way you can then log in and have it, it'll log into the websites for you. You can have it on your phone. You can have it on your laptop. And so if you add something on your phone or change a password on your laptop, it all syncs together. So my goal, my 100% goal, is I don't want to know any passwords. I'm almost there. I think I've got three passwords that I know. One is to my vault, where all my other passwords are, and there's two other passwords that can't possibly go in there for other reasons. But I don't want to, like, if someone were to ask me, all right, log into your bank, I would be like, I don't know that password. I truly don't. I just use this other software to get in there. And no, I'm not giving you access to that. So it'll create really impossible to guess passwords for you and maintain them, and then tell you when you need to change them. And they'll also tell you, a lot of these software packages will tell you if the bank you're using has been hacked, for example, and then that you should be on high alert. So that's the first thing, just really, really strong passwords. And sort of tied to that is that humans can't really win this game any longer. There's just too many places that you have to log into and too many systems and accounts and identities that you own. So just give up, use a password manager and make your life a lot easier. Along with that, not only choosing strong passwords, but please, if you have a service that allows it, enable two-step verification or two-factor authentication on everything that you own. Your Google mail inbox, your banking, your 401k, everything that is, especially where you've got sensitive financial or other, like health records or something like that, email, calendars, anything that's private, so that when you log in, it'll send you a text message or it'll alert you through some other system. Or you have to have enroll a trusted device, like maybe your laptop or maybe your computer at home. That way, nobody else can then try to reset your password and then make it successfully happen. The lack of two-step verification and two-factor authentication is what undermined a lot of what happened in the DNC during the election. So if they just had that extra step in there, I think a lot of our problems they experienced would have been avoided completely. Now, a lot of services don't have this, but if you have it, please take the time. I know it's a pain, but adding the two-step verification can make it so effective, because even if the hacker or whoever has gotten your password, guessed it or stolen it, they can't log in until they have that other code, which is going to go to your phone or to another email address or something like that. So very, very effective. The third thing, I'm checking here to make sure there's no questions. So again, 5-star if you have questions. The third thing you can do to completely increase your security is that all of your devices, laptops, your iMac at home, whatever, your desktop machine, your iOS device or your Android phone, your any tablets that you have, protect them all with a passcode, pins, and passwords. So you can't just walk up to a computer and, like, move the mouse around and have the screen open up. Have it actually require a login for everything, for every device. And if your devices support it, please don't use the minimum requirement for passcodes and pins. So, for example, when you first get an iOS device, I think in the old days it was like 4-digit, and now it's a 6-digit numeric pin. I immediately switched over to alphanumeric, and I've got a long string that I type a password that I pass in, type in to get into that phone. It's really impossible to guess. Like, I think it goes into the billions of tries or something like that for people who are trying to break in. It's just not going to happen. So that way, if your device is ever lost, if it's stolen, anything like that, or if you have, like, for example, just from a safety perspective, from a security perspective, if you're away on vacation, someone breaks into your house and just, like, can't get into your computer just there, right? If they steal your computer, if they're rooting around in your medical bills or your financial records or anything like that, they can't get in if you've got a strong password for entry on all your devices. It's a really good idea. And then I think one of the stories that we're going to hear from Lisa is this next one, which is super duper easy to get to fall behind on, but it's super duper crucial, and that is keeping everything that you own, software and systems, up to date. If you're watching Hollywood movies, blockbusters about computer hackers and whatever, the myth out there is that the computer hacker is going to get into your system because they did some super clever hack with encryption and blah, 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 and they defeated your firewalls and whatever. No. More than likely, they're going to figure out that your system has an old version of an operating system that they know has a security vulnerability, and they're going to use that against you. So when the patches and updates come through on your computers and devices, take the time to update if you can. That way you'll reduce your exposure to lots of bad people and bad things. And then the last thing that I want to talk about tonight, and this is where everyone can do a better job, myself included, is just be really aware that everything you post on social media, for example, or on the internet, is basically open to the entire world. And so if you're telling people, like a few years ago, the big rage, the big fad was, checking into Foursquare and Gowalla. And, every time you went to a restaurant or bar or, favorite place, bowling alley, whatever, and that builds a record out there. People know your movements. One story I have is a really good friend of mine who's the CEO of startups and did a bunch of stuff in the tech community. And she started noticing that there was this one guy that kept on showing up at all the places she was going to. She just had that much awareness, seven or eight times. And finally confronted this guy, like, why are you following me? And the guy was like, I have this idea for a company. I wanted to pitch you, and I didn't know how else to do this, and I'm the super awkward tech guy, and so I just followed you on GoWallet and Foursquare and just decided I would just kind of keep track of you and like try to figure out like who you're hanging out with and maybe where I could approach you. So I was like, super creepy dude, ooh, no, I don't want to hear you pitch, but then on the other hand, my question to her was, well, why were you posting every move you were making? The same goes out to, don't do that. That's just, don't give people the opportunity to see where you're doing and tracking. And the same goes for everyone who's on vacation in Cabo and posts their Facebook pictures while they're on vacation. Like, super dumb. That could create an opportunity for someone to break into your house or to know, for someone who is in the business of trying to figure you out, that's information they can use against you to try to, like, maybe guess your password or something. I don't know. But be really cautious about what you're doing out there in the real world. And that's really all I've got. And so those are the five. There's probably another 10 where people can really start clamping down, like figuring out how to encrypt your communications. But those five really will get you a long, long way. You know, the strong passwords, two-factor or two-step verification, making sure all your devices have passcodes and PINs, keeping yourself up to date, and just sort of being aware of what you're posting on social media. But Lisa, it sounds like you had a story about patching and upgrading, I think.
I'll be quick about it, but I have a couple of websites, two of which have my name all over them. One is myname.com, so there you go. And then the other is my business website, which, of course, has my name all over it. And then I have a couple of, like, little hobby sites that don't have my name associated with them. Tuesday, yesterday morning, I got an email from my web host saying that my sites were going to be shut down. My domain was going to be shut down because my site was spamvertising. And I was like, what does that mean? So I had never heard of spamvertising before yesterday. But what had happened, now I'm much poorer today as a result of this because I'm not a super technological person, and I had to pay somebody to fix my problem. But three of my sites had been hacked with malware that had gotten in there through failing to update my WordPress installation to the most updated WordPress installation, either through that or through a plugin that also had not been updated. And I'm usually pretty good about this, but had kind of let it slide recently, busy and whatever, all of the excuses. Sometime on, I guess, Monday or Sunday, someone had spoofed my domain and sent out probably thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, of spam emails telling people that they had a FedEx package to pick up. So if you got one from me, I'm really sorry. But the infection, I guess, so to speak, was so pervasive that I had to pay a security company, right, that does this kind of stuff for websites to clean my sites. And I now have a firewall, stronger firewall on them. And you can bet I will never, ever fail to update my installation and my plugins again.
You know, you're not alone. I mean, I wouldn't feel too bad. Some of the most famous hacks in the world are about mundane, you know, like stupidly, like just boring things. So a few years ago, there was the case of Mossack Fonseca, which is the law firm in Panama that was hacked and had like all those documents knocked out of it, like exfiltrated from that place from their document repository about how people were moving money around and all the, you know, how the Russians were doing this and that and the other. The hacker who did that like gained entry via a expired WordPress plugin. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history. I mean, they actually, you know, I don't know how many terabytes of stuff they exfiltrated out, which is actually another, like, that's another discussion because they should have been monitoring how much traffic was going out of that plugin. But it was just something that site was set up and then they didn't keep updating it. Now, I know, for example, like a lot of hosting services will then, once they set up a WordPress installation, for example, will then keep your main WordPress updated, but the plugins are another question. So it serves, you know, for in this example, it serves to, like, every once in a while go into your administrative panel, go to the plugins, and just see. It'll actually have a little badge, like a one or two or three, to tell you how many plugins are either expired, have lost support, or need, or there's a new patch available. And they're actually pretty good at the WordPress plugin repo to tell you when something like that has happened, so that you can get your stuff updated. So we actually have a question. Kimberly from Columbus. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Speaker now. Hi, this is Kimberly in Columbus, Ohio, but I don't have a question about digital security. So if you want to put me back to the end, that's fine.
No, go ahead and ask your question. We'll take any questions you got.
Awesome. We have like 4,700 members in Indivisible Columbus, and as the midterm elections are starting to shape up and, you know, Democratic candidates are starting to declare, many of our members are interested in holding fundraisers and helping Democratic candidates in our area, especially our U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. And I'm kind of waffling about this because I don't want Indivisible Columbus to be seen as an arm of the Democratic Party, and the Indivisible mission is defensive legislative action only. So I'm just kind of wondering how I can square that circle and, you know, and help our people get involved without compromising the Indivisible mission.
It's a great question.
Thank you.
So I can respond to this a little bit, and I would encourage you to reach out to Indivisible, to the national group. So I have reached out to the national group and gotten some feedback from them about this. But the short answer is this is a complicated thing that I think a lot of us are facing right now and trying to sort out what the most appropriate strategy is. We here in Austin, we hear from a lot of people that they, you know, just as we have some members who are supporters who are would identify as disaffected Republicans, we have a lot of folks who identify as supporters who are disaffected Democrats and don't feel like the Democratic Party is a home to them.
Exactly.
Right. And so this is something that I think in the national group is starting to hear, you know, more and more from folks, and they have told the person that I tend to communicate with there has told me that they are coming to grips with this, but they don't really have a position on it just yet, but they hope to soon. And their guidance to me was, you know, local groups shouldn't, you know, take their sort of where they are in their process as a sign that we shouldn't move forward, right? So some of it will come down to like very sort of basic sorts of stuff, like what kind of legal structure does your organization have? So if you have no legal structure at this point, right, then you're not in any dangerous position of compromising your organization's legality by doing something. But I don't
I'm not concerned about legal.
Right. The question you're asking is, do we support candidates, or do, you know, how do we move forward with this? And so I think that there's a lot of work that Indivisible groups can do that's 100% nonpartisan, working with people on voter registration. There are people here in Austin who are focused on filling precinct chairs, which is actually a partisan thing here, right, because there's a Republican chair and there's a Democratic chair. But it's elections-oriented work. But some groups are starting to do work that is much more electoral specifically. They've gotten involved in only nonpartisan elections. So that's sort of another thing, you know, maybe. But I think what each of our groups ultimately is going to have to decide for itself is, you know, will our groups endorse candidates? And a suggestion that was made to me, and I don't have an answer for this. This is something that, you know, we're grappling with, that a lot of our group leaders really started talking about last week. And a suggestion that was made to me was to maybe start to think about what the criteria would be for a candidate who, you know, fulfills the ideals that your group has. And those ideals may more naturally align with one party than with another, but ideals are not partisan. And so that may be something to start doing at this point, sort of figuring out what those are and then deciding if your group will endorse candidates based on whether or not they meet those criteria. And so I thought that was a pretty kind of rational and reasonable way to start thinking about it. It feels like 2018 is really far away, but it also feels like it's a minute away. And so rather than kind of rushing, and I'm more conservative about this, I will admit, maybe than some people would like for me to be, but I feel strongly that rather than rushing headlong, like, to answer this question tomorrow, that we really should spend a little bit of time deliberating about it and be smart about what makes sense for our groups and for our communities.
That's great. I really hope that we can keep up the conversation about that as we get closer to election time, because, like I said, Sherrod Brown is already kicking up his campaign, and folks are reaching out to me as the head of the Indivisible Columbus group, saying, "Hey, we're going to have a meeting here, and you know, we're getting together some progressive group leaders." And I'm like, "Yeah, we're progressive, but you know, I think Sherrod Brown is the bomb, but I'm not sure that I want to. I don't know. So I want to keep talking about it, and I want that to be part of the conversation."
Well, I really appreciate you bringing it up, because I will certainly filter this back to the person that I tend to talk with at the national group and say, "Hey, guess what? It's not just us."
Okay.
You know, like, kind of as a way to push them forward a little bit harder, just as there are people pushing us forward a little bit harder, maybe than we might normally move on this issue. But yeah, it's coming fast.
Thank you.
Can I speak to this? Can I speak to this briefly as well? This is Cindy.
Yes, please.
During my coffee meetups last week, one of the people who showed up strongly identified as an independent, and he said specifically that the reason he was there is because Indivisible is nonpartisan. He voted for Trump in the primaries, and then switched his vote and wrote in Bernie Sanders for the main election. But he was a true independent and felt like that was a place where we as a group could reach out to get more people and turn around those 2018 elections. So I think it's really important that, you know, as Lisa said, we think about what is right for our group to do. It's clear to me that we have some of these people. We don't want to alienate them by identifying too much with one side or the other.
Absolutely. One of our district leaders in our Columbus, Ohio Congressional District 15 is actually a Republican. So we've got Republicans and independents throughout our group. I don't want to alienate them, but I do want to support the progressive ideals that, you know, that Indivisible is espousing, but I just need some guidance.
Sure,
yeah,
it's a complicated issue.
I think we're all right there with you.
All righty,
thanks. I really like I really like this idea of, and I don't know, maybe this is a harsh phrase, but a litmus test or what you're talking about, which is sort of a list of ideals, because quite frankly, a centrist Republican might actually be someone who aligns with what we want to do. And so the question then becomes, if we support that person and they win, and so in a Republican district, maybe we replace a Republican we don't like with a Republican we can work with, it doesn't change the scoreboard, like big air quotes around all that. Like, we haven't flipped a region or a district, but we've actually made it easier to talk to our representative. And so it really does become a complicated dialogue of, like, what do we want to get out of this? And it's not as easy as I think some people think it is. It's not like a blue versus red kind of thing. And so it's a really great question. And I think everyone's grappling with this topic. We have a question. Thank you so much, Kimberly. And you know, week after week, you call in from Columbus, and we really appreciate having that connection up there. Thank you so much for calling in. We have a question from Ricardo, so I'm going to go to Ricardo here real quick. Let's see if I can unmute him. Hello. I think I've unmuted Ricardo.
Yep.
Hello.
Hey, Tom. How are you, man?
Hi. Hey, man.
Hey, I actually wanted to chime in on that last question, because it is a huge question that's been coming up in our district as well. I'm the group leader for Texas 17, and as you may know, if you've been joining the calls, Austin is extremely gerrymandered. So one of the things that we've been, you know, that I've been discussing with folks in our district is using that as kind of a, not just the values, but a kind of a litmus test of, like, there are Democrats who are fine with gerrymandering. There are clearly Republicans in our area who are fine with gerrymandering, and we are against gerrymandering. Because we're seeing that it's something that's leading to more and more partisanship on both sides. You win the primary and you're in. So there's no competitive election. And it's hollowing out the center of our political dialogue. So I would throw that out there as one potential way that you can kind of vet. Well, we're the position we're heading towards, it seems, is, yes, we're cautious about wanting to get involved with any particular party. At the moment, there are more Democrats who probably align with resisting the Trump agenda, resisting the authoritarian agenda. But in the longer run, in terms of getting behind a candidate working for a candidate, I think the other thing is maybe not going to the extent of endorsing candidates, because then that becomes, you clearly are taking a partisan position. But independently saying, hey, our organization may suggest to our members that we have spoken to candidates and we think a candidate may be more aligned with our values and our goals. That's a different matter than actually endorsing. So anyway, I just wanted to throw those thoughts out there from the discussions we've been having. Also, I don't want to take full credit, because this has been a discussion that's also been happening with several Texas Twitter admins via direct message conversation. Including Felicia and Wilco. I got to give big props, because they actually wrote something that, and I don't know if Felicia's on the call, but I'm happy to try to send it to whoever, Tom or somebody in the Indivisible Austin, so we can share what they came up with, which is basically that's why we're leaning towards what they already wrote, which is no endorsements, but definitely trying to figure out which candidates, not parties, going for candidates.
Mm-hmm. So I believe that Felicia is unmuted right now, and she's on the call. Hi.
Awesome. Well, you take it away, Felicia.
Are you there, Felicia?
Or maybe she's muted herself.
Anyway, she is on the call. So if she's hearing us, she can add a note or two if she wants. Anyway, so we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left on the call. We've got a really good topic here, plus we have the digital safety and security. If you have any questions, now's the time to ask them. We can unmute you. Do any of the other board members have any other announcements that we maybe forgot to put at the top? okay. Yeah, maybe. I think maybe that was maybe she's muted herself. I don't know. So do we have any other announcements or anything else? Otherwise, we can end the call a little bit early and give everyone back a few minutes.
No, I don't have anything else.
Okay.
I'm good.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining the call. Some really great questions. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Ricardo, and everyone else. And we're going to go ahead and end the call. And everyone, have a good evening. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks.